How should the price of water be set in California? Conservationists say raising rates for those who use the most water is the only way to encourage conservation. But for home users, reducing water consumption might not result in a lower water bill. Water agencies are raising rates to make up for the money they're losing as customers conserve. Even though water is cheap, residents are not happy about the rate hikes. Water for farmers is even cheaper. Conservationists say if farmers paid more, they might not grow thirsty crops and would probably waste less. So on today's Your Call, we continue our series on solutions to California's water crisis by talking about pricing. What needs to change? And do you agree with increased pricing? Join us after the news. Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today, we continue our week-long series on solutions to California's water crisis by talking about water pricing. On April 1st, Governor Jerry Brown issued an emergency executive order that imposes a 25% reduction in urban water use. He also encouraged a tiered water pricing system as a way to promote water conservation. So the more water you use, the more you pay. About two-thirds of the state's 400 water agencies use some form of tiered water pricing to encourage conservation. But reducing water consumption might not result in a lower water bill. Water agencies are raising rates to make up for the money they're losing as customers conserve. According to the Associated Press, cuts are expected to leave agencies with a billion-dollar hole in revenue. The San Francisco Chronicle reports that water departments across California are raising rates. In April, for example, the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, the Bay Area's largest water supplier, began notifying citizens in more than 20 communities that their home July bills would increase by about 28%. Now, even though water is very cheap in California, residents who are conserving are angry about the rate hikes. Water is even cheaper for farmers who use 80% of the state's water. Farmers basically follow a first-come, first-served method. The first farmers to get water have the right to an unlimited amount. And then farmers who arrived later, often referred to as junior farmers, have to essentially wait in line. According to The Economist, quote, farmers flood the land to grow rice, alfalfa, and other thirsty crops. If water were priced properly, it's a safe bet that they would waste far less of it, and the effects of California's drought would not be so severe, end quote. The key word there is properly. How should water be priced? What would it mean to properly price water? And what does an equitable water pricing system look like? Today we are joined by Johanna Dyer. She's a water policy advocate with the Natural Resource Defense Council's water program. Her work focuses on clean water and retail water pricing for conservation. She's also on the board of the California Water Conservation Council. This is a group of water conservation NGOs and the state's 400 water agencies. And Johanna joins us from Santa Monica. Hi, Johanna. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Tom Ash. Tom has over 25 years of experience in the fields of water use efficiency, public education, and horticulture. Tom is the Senior Environmental Resources Planner at the Inland Empire Utility Agency. They're tasked with assisting member agencies with developing water rates that stabilize agency revenues while targeting water use efficiency at the customer level. And Tom joins us from Orange County. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thank you very much.
It's great to have both of you. So what we're going to do today is, first off, we will focus on home use, and then we will talk about farm use, because both are very different, and I don't want to confuse anybody, so we'll separate those. So let's first talk about home use. And Tom, let's start off with you. Water pricing varies by city and county. And two-thirds of water districts use some form of tiered water pricing to encourage conservation, meaning if you use more, you pay more. But as I just said, and in many cases, people who are using less might not see a drop in their bill, or in some cases, they're going to see a price hike. So first off, Talk about how water prices are set in the state. Why do we have this system?
Every water agency, Rose, is different in where they get their water, their sources of water, the cost to get that water to homes and businesses. So every agency has a different price to start with. And then as local elected officials managing those water agencies, they have different philosophies on how to price water, and hence with different prices and different philosophies, you get a number of different rate structures, or what appears to be different rate structures. You certainly mentioned that most agencies have tiered rates. That's true, and that is a one piece that goes into a conservation-based rate structure philosophy. So water prices can vary, and they will continue to vary, and you're absolutely right that the message right now is, unfortunately, is not a very good message, that if you save water, your rates are probably going to go up. That is not the fault of people saving water. We need them to do that, and that's a good thing for them. It's the design of the rate structures that causes that financial problem for agencies.
And Johanna, what would you add to that? We were talking before the show, and some of us who rent apartments don't even know how much our water costs because our landlord pays the bill. A lot of us are just sort of learning now about water rates because of the drought. What would you add just in terms of how water prices are set in the state, and why do these 400 agencies all charge different rates for water?
Yeah, well, there's no... the municipal agencies are self-regulated, so aside from some oversight from the State Water Board, they kind of decide amongst themselves how to meet their revenue needs. And so they can kind of decide, I mean, every agency is different, does have different requirements and different customer classes. You have some agencies that have maybe a very high number of commercial or industrial customers. So they might only have like a few customers and have to figure out how to allocate money, the revenue needs and water distribution among those. And then you have other districts that are almost all residential, which requires a very different approach. So there is a need for a certain amount of flexibility for all these different agencies to meet their own revenue needs while recognizing the differences in their operations and their customer classes.
And how, when you meet with these agencies, because you're on the board of the California Water Conservation Council, which is a group of water conservation NGOs and these 400 water agencies, how do they set their rates? How is it determined?
So it's all very, very individual. As a group, we've sort of been interested in coming together to create a standard by which you can evaluate the conservation price signal that's being sent by an agency's water rates. So there are a few components to there's basically like a scoring sheet that we came up with in a way for water agencies to get points, if you will, based on their rate structure. And so that can include you get more points for kind of having a tiered structure, a tiered rate structure, especially if it has more tiers or more differentiation between volumes of consumption, or if you have a seasonal rate, which is where during the peak use, generally the hotter summer months when demand for water is really high and when you have a need to conserve because it puts a lot of pressure on the system because people are using lots of water in the summer. So during those months, there are ways to structure the rates seasonally so that it encourages conservation. That might include pricing the water higher during the hot months so that people will, either hopefully adapt by doing something about their landscaping, making it more drought-friendly so they use less water, or just make other there will be an incentive to move toward conservation in other ways, like more efficient appliances and things like that at the time when we most need conservation. So there are a lot of different components. Another important piece is actually how much of the charge is that the customer sees on their bill is fixed charges, and how much is volumetric, like based on the amount of consumption. So, and ideally, to encourage conservation the most, you want the charge to be as volumetric as possible. If you have a really high fixed charge, let's say everyone in town is paying, a $50 flat charge plus for the volume of you know, maybe $2 per unit or something for the amount of water that they're using on top of this fixed charge. It's actually kind of regressive because low-volume users are still going to pay a high charge. And it's also not good for conservation because less of the bill is based on a customer's consumption, so they see less of a price signal. Like, no matter what you consume, you're going to pay kind of a high bill. So you have potentially less incentive to conserve. So there are lots of things that agencies can and should take into consideration when trying to encourage conservation during this time of drought.
And Tom, what would you add to that? You work with the Inland Empire Utility Agency, which assists member agencies with developing their water rates. And the New York Times had a piece about setting rates, and they just used Irvine Ranch in California as an example. This water district introduced rising fee schedules. So they're starting low for a basic allotment covering the essentials in a home, and then the fees rise quickly with volume to make people think twice about refilling their swimming pools, for example.
You know, Joanna brought up a very good point, that there's really two charges on a water bill. One is a fixed charge, so the fixed cost that an agency has to make sure they can deliver safe, clean water 24/7, 365, and the variable charge, which is the water, the energy to pump that water, and the treatment to clean that water. That's the variable side. What Irvine Ranch did 25 years ago is, in the middle of a six-year drought, the 87-92 drought, they were losing money as an agency, asking people to save water. They did, and their rate structure was designed in such a way where much of the fixed costs were embedded in the variable charges. So as people saved water, the agency lost money, and then in turn had to turn around and say to customers, we need to charge you more. And that's what because we haven't sold enough water. That's what agencies are faced today in a very big way. So what Irvine did is recognize three things. Number one, you have to recover your cost of service as a public agency. They're not a profit-making organization, even though you know you're going to be selling less water. And we're in a new normal now where we are in the business, if you will, of managing our water resources, not selling more water. The second thing you need to do is to create an efficiency ethic. This is a four-year drought being talked about, but it's really been seven of the last 8 years have been dry years. And NASA is predicting that we're going to have a very good chance of a 30 to 50-year dry cycle this century. So we need to have rate structures that recognize conservation, reward efficient use, and penalize water waste. And then the third element is to be fair and equitable to customers. And fortunately, we have state legislation that now enables us to do that. But Irvine did that 25 years ago. They've been very successful. They have stable revenue and one of the most efficient communities in the state. And it was really based on their efficiency-based rate structure.
And so customers, understandably so, are angry because they're doing what they can to conserve. In many cases, their bills are either not going down or they are increasing. And the cuts are expected to leave water agencies with about a billion dollar hole in revenue, and they'll likely turn to their customers to plug it. So, Johanna, what do these water agencies do with their revenue? How is most of that money spent?
So a lot of, most of that money or much of that money goes toward supplying the water, obviously. But beyond kind of getting the water, however that's gotten, you know, through buying it from whether it's from buying from wholesalers or whether it's pumping groundwater, some of that comes to just the water itself. Much of that is spent on energy costs to pump the water all over the state, especially if the water is going long distances. And a lot of it goes to, staff, salaries, things like that, conservation programs. Here in L.A., our municipal water district or our metropolitan water district just passed a budget addition to allow another $350 million for this turf removal rebate program that we have here. And so that will go into the revenue requirement. And of course, maintenance of maintenance and improvements to infrastructure is another major, major cost of operating a water utility because here in California, I'm sure you've heard, we have a very aging kind of leaky water infrastructure. Many of our pipes are very, very old, over 100 years in many cases, and they're starting to fail. And so some water agencies have also felt the need to increase their revenue needs lately so that they can get in there and fix some of this leaking infrastructure because, especially during a time of drought, it's really devastating to lose potentially potable water in that way. So there are many costs beyond just the water itself that the utility needs to operate properly and to make sure that we all have safe, healthy water and that there's enough on hand for emergencies. So even if there is conservation, there is a certain amount of water that has to be available at all times for example, fire control and things like that.
So to take another example, Tom, the AP looked at Santa Barbara, and residents there have cut back by 37% in May. That's really good. So Santa Barbara, though, the water utility agencies there expect to lose about $5 million, which is great the conservation's great for the water supply, but bad for the financial stability of these agencies. So water bills in Santa Barbara rose between $13 and $120, depending on water use, which would help the water agencies recover the revenue. They're also working to activate a desal plant in Santa Barbara. Can you talk about these increases? How do the water agencies decide how much to increase the bill as customers conserve, and how much can they raise prices? Is there a cap?
There is no cap. It depends upon the cost, recovering the cost of service, as it's called, for the agencies. So the problem that agencies have is that and Santa Barbara would be a good example, is that much of their cost, meaning 75 to 80%, may be fixed costs. That infrastructure, maintaining it, keeping, doing water testing and environmental quality testing. And the smaller cost is actually the cost of water itself. So how do you then send the right signal to customers to use less when most of your costs are fixed? And so that's the art of designing a rate structure that's fair, equitable, sends the right message. There is no cap. It's the cost of water. Santa Barbara happens to be in a location where they're very far from the state water system. It doesn't rain much, and that's why they'd have to resurrect the desalinization plant that they actually built right after the last six-year drought in 92. They needed water for the community. They were not hooked up to the water system, and it's just one of those local problems that you see. Every water agency deals with it a little differently based on their local scenario. So the problem is not people saving water. The problem is how the rent structure there is designed, because they lose fixed cost as customers save water. And the agencies that are not having that problem have looked at the price of water, the rate structure design, much differently, where they want to recover their fixed cost as independently as they can from water sales, because water sales go up and down, and they want to be, yet they want to send the message that efficiently used water is inexpensive water, and wasted water is very expensive water, and that's where you get then a steep incline in tiers.
And it's not clear how widespread these rate increases are, because no government agency or association tracks them, right?
That's right. Every agency is local. Every agency is governed by their elected officials, and they have different costs. So what looks different in one agency to another agency may be very legitimate. So there's not one standard that fits all. There's not one price that fits all. It's all local.
That is Tom Ash. He is Senior Environmental Resources Planner at the Inland Empire Utility Agency, which assists member agencies with developing water rates that stabilize revenues while targeting water use efficiency at the customer level. Johanna Dyer is a water policy advocate with the Natural Resource Defense Council's water program. She also sits on the board of the California Water Conservation Council. This is a group of water conservation NGOs and the state's 400 water agencies. And today on Your Call, we are continuing our week-long series on California's water crisis by talking about pricing. What we're doing is kind of splitting the show. We're talking now about home use, and then we'll talk about farms. because they're very different. So we'd love to hear from you. Have you seen your bill change at all? If you are conserving, chances are your bill maybe didn't go down. In some cases, it went up. If you live in the Bay Area, in April, the San Francisco PUC notified citizens in about 20 communities that their July bills would increase by 28%. And this is because people are conserving. That means the revenue's not coming in. Cuts are expected to leave agencies, water agencies, with a $1 billion hole in revenue. So what are your thoughts about pricing? Is this something that you've been thinking about? Do you even know how your water is priced? How has your bill changed over the years? If you work on water issues or for one of these agencies, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, Johanna, what are your overall thoughts about home use and water and how it's priced, specifically these water price hikes?
I think Tom makes a good point about the need for us really to consider fairness. And it's really important to keep in mind just the amount of water that we actually need to live good lives. It's perhaps widely known now by your listeners, because I know you've had a few series on these, but one of the main ways that we use water residentially is actually outdoor water use. And I think this was kind of a surprise to many people until it's been more widely publicized during the drought. So from many studies, it looks as if outdoor use is really impacted by conservation-oriented pricing structures, including tiered pricing. So it's incredibly important that agencies, as they're setting their prices, make sure that everyone is permitted to have their essential indoor use needs met. No one needs to stop showering. You can wash your dishes and wash your clothes. But to maintain affordability for that essential use. But when it comes to higher volume use, which is usually related to outdoor use and which is, for most people, not essential use, then that's where you should really start to see increases in costs. And that will really help to encourage conservation and also make it more economically make more economic sense for people to implement conservation measures that might cost a little bit of money, like replacing your turf lawn with a landscape that's more drought friendly and more climate friendly.
And Tom, what would you add to that? What are your thoughts on these price hikes that are now hitting customers who are conserving?
Well, and again, the home is a great place to take a look and get a handle on how much water you're using and what your bill could be if you use it efficiently. So we have the data now, and water agencies can do this, and we have state legislation that backs this up. It makes it defensible for the local agencies that an indoor allocation for people, and that's how you could start to set tiers and the relative prices. An efficient use, a reasonable use of water, would be about 50 gallons per person per day. And that's written into state legislation, into XBX 7, the 20x20 legislation. So depending on the number of people inside the house, you would get an allocation then, or an efficiency standard, or a message, an economic message, if you're using water efficiently inside. Doesn't matter how big the family is, you would. The state legislation makes it impartial defensible no matter how many people you have. On the outside, Joanna's exactly right. That's where much of the water goes. It's hot in Southern California, a little cooler in Northern California. And so outside water is actually priced a little higher in an efficiency-based rate structure because there's peaking costs and other costs related to building an infrastructure to accommodate landscape water. That outside water, depending on the size of the landscape you have and the weather where you live, is also written in state legislation. That's AB 1881. So we have the data, and some agencies use this to create their rate structures to give customers a very scientific and impartial and objective target to shoot for. And then they know how much water they need to use inside and outside. That monthly bill sends them a message, an economic message, because if they go over that allocation, then they start paying very steep tiered price.
And hold that thought, Tom. Today we are talking about water pricing. What should change? We'll be back after this.
This is your call on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join our conversation live on the air by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call. You can also send an email, question, or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org or simply post your comment on the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the World Service of the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. And then at noon today, Philosophy Talk.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will continue our week-long series on solutions to California's drought by talking about recycling and reusing wastewater. In California, only a quarter of wastewater is recycled and reused. But as the drought continues, recycled water is getting a lot of attention, and it's expected to be a significant future source for landscaping and drinking. So what questions do you have about recycled water and what's in store for its future? Thursday, we'll talk about our diets and the drought. What if we ate less meat and dairy? California is now the number two dairy state in the country. So how is that affecting water? And what if we cut back? That's Thursday. Friday, we'll talk about media coverage of the drought. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about water pricing. Right now, we're talking about water pricing in the home, and then we'll talk about water pricing on farms. So what questions do you have about water pricing? If you've seen changes in your bill in the last couple of months, we'd love to hear from you. So what's happening right now is a lot of people are doing a really great job of conserving water, but their bills are going up in some cases, or in some cases their bills aren't moving at all. And that's because water agencies have to make up for the money that they're losing as we all conserve. So these cuts are expected to leave agencies with a $1 billion hole in revenue. In the Bay Area, you're going to see your bill probably increase by about 28%, according to the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. So what are your thoughts on that, and what questions do you have? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So even though water is really cheap, we should keep repeating that. Johanna, people who are quoted in articles about water are really angry about the increase. So what are your thoughts about how the state and water agency should deal with this? Because if your bill's not going down, I'm sure a lot of people still want to do the right thing, but there's no financial incentive to conserve. How do you think the state and water agency should deal with that?
Well, first of all, if someone doesn't conserve, their bill is still going to continue to go up. So there is still an incentive. It's you know, unfortunately, the bill may or may not. It actually varies by district. Some districts, certain types of customers will not see their bills go up. But even if someone does see their bill go up, if they don't conserve, it'll go up even more probably. So there still is a real benefit to it. And of course, you know, there's the need to really try to do the right thing. We're all in this together. This is really a difficult time for California, and our resources are being stretched so thin that it really is the right thing for everyone to do, to just pitch in and conserve in any way that they can reasonably do so. And when it comes to agencies, you know, they really need to just keep these principles in mind. In particular, like I mentioned earlier, it's very important that they do what they can to ensure affordability for basic use. For their average customer who is conserving, and to ensure that they can meet their indoor use needs without seeing their water become totally unaffordable. And so that's sort of where the agencies need to look into their allocations, as Tom mentioned earlier. And so you might set your tier one rate, like your lowest rate for water, the cheapest water, to include only indoor use, you know, which Tom mentioned earlier, it might be something like 50 gallons per person per day in a household. And so then if you exceed that amount, then you go and you decide that you you make your choice to fill your pool and water your lawn and all these other things, and getting into heavier outdoor use, just beyond your essential indoor use, then people might need to pay more. But since those are choices and that's not water that is actually essential, then it makes sense, I think, from a fairness perspective and from making sure, you know, and from the sense of making sure that we all have what we actually need.
And then, Tom, in some cases, half of the homes in Sacramento, for example, still don't have water meters, so they pay a flat fee no matter how much they consume. How widespread is that across the state, and is that going to change anytime soon?
Well, there was legislation a number of years ago that required cities to install water meters, and that we're not there yet in some parts of the state, and it's more of a Sacramento is not rural, but it mainly happens out in the rural areas. But Sacramento is a perfect example of this should have been done years ago. You can't manage what you can't measure, and that water meter is critical to understanding what you're using, how much you really need, and then how to charge properly for that water. You know, this is a key moment in California. This drought could continue. It could rain like crazy this fall, this winter. But it could continue, and we have a history, a climate history, of as much as 50 dry years in a century. And so we might be heading in that direction. Certainly the climate has warmed, and that hurts our snowpack and our plumbing system that we're used to in California that moves water around the state. If we have something that interrupts that system, then we've got a problem. Having a meter, having measurement is key. We've got good science. We know what weather is in any part of the state. We can know how big a lot is, and we can know how many people are inside a home to equitably allocate water so that they're charged appropriately. But this is a key moment for California. A lot of things can get fixed, and a lot of folks at the state level and the local levels are talking about how to fix water rates so that the headlines that you've been describing stop happening, so that we stop penalizing people for saving water. We have to reward them for saving water, but we also have to tell them what their target is, and that's where an efficiency-based rate structure really comes in handy. In Irvine, you mentioned, they've reduced their landscape water use by 60% over the time period that they've had an efficiency-based rate structure. So that's incredible. I think that can happen across the state.
Well, let's hear from a listener in San Jose who wants to talk about his water, the private company that delivers his water. Let's go to Mark in San Jose. Hi, Mark.
Hi, great topic. San Jose is in a fairly unique position because we have a private water company. So they also moved all the pricing to the infrastructure by the size of the water meter years ago, which allowed them to maximize their profits, revenues and profits, and it also discouraged the conservation because, of course, it shifted to a fixed cost on the bill. And my fixed cost has always been more because I have a one-inch meter, is more than my usage cost. And they loved it that way. And so now they're going to try to raise rates all around. And the main problem, I mean, I don't see a problem with paying more for scarce resources. But this is a private company that exists in San Jose and Texas that is taking profits. I doubt that they're regulated much by the PUC, since the PUC doesn't seem to be able to do that too well with anybody. And we have the worst water in the Bay Area. We have, you know, very hard water that reduces the life of many things in the house and major utilities, washers and dryers, washers and dishwashers. And, you know, I'm cleaning the calcium off all of my pipes all the time on the cold water side.
Really?
Why? So we have terrible water pumped out of the ground.
Why is that?
By a private company that San Jose tried to acquire through eminent domain back in the 30s, and they lost a vote on that.
I didn't know that about water quality in San Jose. So why is that?
400 parts per million, because they choose not to spend the money to take it out, and they transfer the cost of dealing with that onto the user.
Huh. Wow. Well, thanks for calling, Mark. Tom, how widespread is this? Do we know how many Californians get their water delivered by a private company?
Yes, about 15% of customers, water users in California, are under private water companies. And so what your caller described is exactly right. They tend to try to maximize profits and revenues, and it's by selling more of the most essential resource that we have. So, I think this is a moment in time where even the PUC, the Public Utility Commission, and private water companies need to look at how they do business, as just as the public water agencies are doing all the time. And public agencies serve about 85% of the population throughout the state.
Johanna, do you have any words from Mark and people who get their water delivered by a private company? Is there a way for citizens to really use their voice if they have to deal with a private company versus a water agency?
Yeah, it's really difficult. Private agency or public agencies, municipal water agencies, have certain requirements under Prop 218, which we'll probably get into a little bit later. Under Prop 218, which is they have to give public notice of any rate changes and rate increases, and voters can actually vote down any rate adjustments if the majority of affected customers protest it when it comes to water pricing.
Hmm.
But when you're talking about a private water agency, a private water company, they don't have the same requirements under Prop 218. And so there is, unfortunately, somewhat less that that customers can do, I think, from a legal perspective. And I think the way their rates, the way Mark's rates are structured, is kind of exactly what we don't love to see, which is they're not encouraging conservation because they do include a very high fixed cost. So no matter how little Mark consumes or how much he focuses on conservation and, you know, trying to buy good appliances, trying to buy efficient appliances and watering less, he'll still see a high water bill because, you know, the agency is working to sort of maximize its own profits and to maximize its revenue stability by ensuring that it gets a certain amount from all of its customers. And so it is a shame, but you know, I would continue to talk to the agency and see what can happen. There is, because of the dire situation that we're in right now, I think there is a really increased interest on all parties in working on conservation. And there's increased attention also given, you know, the eyes of the government on this issue. So,
well, right. And so,
the time is ripe.
Can the state do anything to level the playing field between the private companies and the public water agencies? And do you think it should?
I don't know. Tom, did you have any thoughts on that? Because
it's a very difficult political situation because the private companies are governed by the PUC, and so there would have to be changes perhaps directed by the governor or state agencies on sort of rectifying and bringing into compliance all water agencies into a kind of a general fold, and right now that doesn't happen. There are some private agencies, companies, water companies, that have tiered rates. And there's even one agency, Valencia Water Company, is private, that has an efficiency-based rate. They actually modeled it after Irvine Ranch, and they do very well. There are agencies, and whether you're public or private, that where there are examples where the agencies have stable revenue and more efficiency, and they can actually measure who's efficient and who is not. And only those customers, and this is very much of a social justice topic perhaps, but only those customers who waste water are actually charged those higher tiered rates.
Hmm.
And that is what customers really like about those rate structures, is they do like the fairness. It recognizes the size of the family or the size of the yard or the weather, and they can see that if they're efficient, they have as low a bill as possible, whereas they're not subsidizing those who use more water. When water rates go up, they hurt everyone. They hurt low income more. So the design of the rate structure is really important for the agency to get right. It's sophisticated. It's not easy. It's a complex moving target. But it has been done at agencies, and they're all succeeding financially and conservation-wise.
And one more question on the tiered water rate structure, and then we'll move to farms. In April, the California State Appeals Court ruled that a tiered water rate structure used by the city of San Juan Capistrano to encourage conservation was unconstitutional because it violated a 1996 voter-approved law that prohibits government agencies from charging more for their services than the actual costs. And Johanna, this ruling got a lot of media attention because, you know, a lot of people are arguing that this could have a major implications for water conservation. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. So this goes back to another requirement of Prop 218, which I mentioned earlier, which does require, for public utilities, it requires requires public notice, and you know, voters have an ability to protest if they object to rate adjustments or additional charges. And another requirement of the same proposition, Prop 218, is that charges have to be proportional to the cost of service. And so in the case of San Juan Capistrano, which that came down in April of this year, actually just a couple weeks after the governor made his public announcement and his executive order requiring all these statewide reductions in potable urban water use, and at the same, you know, right after the governor required the state water board to adopt emergency regulations to require, you know, rate structures that encourage conservation. You know, a couple weeks after that, this San Juan Capistrano decision comes down, and which declared the city of San Juan Capistrano's tiered rate structure to be unconstitutional. And so, in that case, the water agency had created a new rate structure that was tiered, and the court held that it violated the Prop 218 requirements that the charges have to be proportional to the cost of providing that service, because at least based on the court's understanding and what appeared to be in the record, the city had sort of set its rate structure arbitrarily, the court felt, which was, you know, they just decided, like, people on the low volume users are going to pay, you know, $2, and the next tier up is going to pay like $4.50, and then it, you know, there was the difference between what the people in the lowest tier and the highest tier were paying was, you know, roughly five times, and so the city was sued by a taxpayer association, and they were saying, you know, the high volume users aren't necessarily costing. It doesn't necessarily cost five times as much to provide water to them as it does to the lower volume users. Such a rate structure could have been justified potentially if the city had done a very strong cost of service study to show, well, actually, the high volume users cost us all these additional charges, which is often the case. You know, the infrastructure has to be built out to accommodate the highest volume users. So you might need bigger pipes and stronger pumps, more energy to make sure that you can provide to everyone who needs water. And so there are actually additional costs associated with very high volume users. But since in this case of San Juan Capistrano, the city hadn't actually shown that. The city hadn't shown, you know, that they could actually justify that and that there were additional costs incurred. And so that rate structure was struck down by the courts. And so this happened when many water agencies are sort of rethinking their rates, and especially in keeping with the governor's executive order. So the ruling does not explicitly says tiered rate structures are fine, and it's, you know, cities are able to allocate higher costs to higher volume use where it's justified, but every water agency does now need to really show just where those extra costs are coming from, and be able to justify that through doing a cost of service study, to the extent that that's possible.
Hmm. Well, it's an interesting case, and we have a link to it at yourcallradio.org if you'd like to read more. Let's take two more calls on home use. Let's go to Lee in Santa Cruz. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I'm a little bit upstream from your basic conversation here, but I never hear anybody talk about composting toilets. They're electric and they require no plumbing. And I know that here in the city of Santa Cruz, around 6 in the morning, they talk about the big flush, because there's this instant humongous need for water to go through the system because everybody's getting ready to go to work. So I'd like to hear some more about composting toilets. I imagine plumbers unions will be against it, And I think it's something that might have to come from the state, because I'm sure building departments are reluctant to change.
Well, Lee, we're talking about pricing today, but just quickly, do either of you have any thoughts on composting toilets, just briefly?
This time I can chime in just a little bit from the public agency standpoint. Is sewage that comes out of homes and businesses is typically taken to a treatment plant, and it's much more cost-effective and efficient to take that sewage and clean it up and use it as recycled water and or recharge our groundwater basins. So an individual composting toilet it would be fairly expensive per home. The technology might be there, but from a community-wide, system-wide approach, I think it's pretty well documented that agencies try to take all that sewage and clean it up in one place and then, you know, use it beneficially in a variety of ways for the community.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Lee. Now, I know you both don't focus on farms. You focus on urban use. But I wanted to ask you just if you have any thoughts about how water should be priced for farmers, because this is getting a lot more attention now. Farmers, the cost of water is very cheap. Water is cheaper for farmers who use about 80% of the state's water versus homes. Farmers follow a first-come, first-serve method. The first farmers to get the water have the right to an unlimited amount and actually receive incentives to use more water. And then farmers who arrive later have to wait in line. They're referred to as junior farmers. And Tom, what are your thoughts on this? According to The Economist, if water were priced properly for farmers, The Economist says it's a safe bet farmers would waste far less water. They might not grow water-intensive crops like alfalfa, and the effects of California's drought would not be so severe. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in theory that makes a lot of sense, and I think that there's some reasons that water costs are cheaper for farmers. They're closer, maybe even sitting on top of the water sources, or the water source might be the mountains right next to them in the Central Valley. But I would think, and I've seen it in agencies, Irvine Ranch is one of them, that used to have an awful lot of agriculture, and we applied the same efficiency-based allocations and rate structure to farms as we did to homes and businesses. Hmm. And it really made a difference in how efficient the farmers became. They used drip irrigation. They watched their usage every day. They watched the weather. They replaced the water that was lost to those plants. They did not overwater. They did not flood irrigate. The same kind of efficiency pricing structure can be used on agriculture. We know exactly how much water crops need. Lots of research on that. Lots of talk about almonds. Well, they use about the same amount of water as citrus. At least physiologically, the plants are need about 60% of the local evapotranspiration rate. Are they overwatered or underwatered? Well, you need a meter, and you need to be able to manage that water much more efficiently than perhaps what it's done now. As far as what crops, that's sort of a business decision on the farmer's part. What sells, what can they take to market, and so forth. But it's a discussion that's being had around the state right now of how do we apply efficiency to ag. And I just need to make one comment that I know the headlines say typically that 80% of the water in the state goes to agriculture. It's actually 40% of the water goes to agriculture, 10% to municipal, and the other 50% that falls onto the state by law, by the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act, has to stay in the environment. So ag uses a lot of water, no question about it. Mm. And I think at the state level, it's a determination the governor's made between food or grass. We don't necessarily need grass. We certainly need food crops.
Well, we'll definitely talk about that on Thursday, because that 80% number comes from the Pacific Institute, and it's just being repeated all over the place, as you know.
I'm actually looking at the Pacific Institute website right now, and it says statewide average water use is roughly 50% environmental, 40% ag, and 10% urban.
Okay. We'll talk about that on Thursday. I wanted to find out, how were you able to implement those changes? Because when it comes to ag, it's incredibly difficult to implement water changes.
Well, certainly history, and I think that's the biggest problem of changing any rate structure in any, whether it's urban or ag, is the traditional nature and the traditional thinking that we have about rates or water costs. We have to realize we're in a new normal, and we have got to change our thinking and our relationship to water and how we price it, how we think about it, and how we use it. It takes an awful lot of water to make a computer. It takes 100 gallons to make one computer. It takes 1,800 gallons to make a pair of jeans. So we have to look at all of our resource use in the state and make sure that we're efficient, that companies or homes or businesses are using water as efficiently as possible, because we're always going to have now this water limitation.
And, Johanna, we're almost out of time, so I just want to ask Ruth Ann's question. She wonders if desalination project, will affect consumer prices in the home. Do you know?
That's a good question. The city of Santa Barbara is kind of in the news right now for a big desal plant that they're building, and, you know, many other coastal communities are starting to consider it, you know, which is trying to purifying ocean water for potable use or other uses. One of the issues with desal is that people often sort of think of it, like, off the top of your mind as something that could be, like, a great solution. Like, there's water all around us. Let's use this. But it's actually very, very expensive. There are a lot of problems with desal. It's very expensive. And as the customers of Santa Barbara will tell you, their water bills are about to go up significantly. Mm. And part of that is the cost of constructing and operating this desal facility. And there are also environmental issues associated with desal. It uses a lot of energy. It's very, very energy intensive. And it also leaves behind a waste brine that's difficult to deal with and that has a lot of potential environmental impacts. So it's not really advisable generally, especially when you consider how much more cost efficient things like, you know, water efficiency are. It's much, much cheaper to implement other efficiency measures and, you know, behavioral changes and changing your fixtures and appliances than it is to build a desal facility. And it's also, and generally for the huge costs that they incur, you know, they don't produce an enormous amount of water. They're kind of, you know, it's like an emergency reserve. So it's not really like going to be a major fix, you know, or like a great solution for most places.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Ruth Ann. We have about 30 seconds, Tom. If you could change one thing when it comes to pricing for home use, what would it be?
I would move away from traditional rate structures that do not recognize conservation, do not recognize individual household size and situation, and I would move to an efficiency-based rate design that is supported by our state legislation. If people use the amount of water that the state has laid out as a reasonable, efficient use, we would all hit our conservation targets.
Tom Ash is Senior Environmental Resources Planner at the Inland Empire Utility Agency, and Johanna Dyer is a water policy advocate with the Natural Resource Defense Council's Water Program. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. To know about recycled water. On the next Your Call, we'll continue our week-long series on solutions to California's water crisis by talking about recycling and reusing wastewater. In California, only a quarter of wastewater is treated, recycled, and reused. As the drought continues, recycled water is getting more attention and is expected to be a significant future source for landscaping and drinking. So what's the future of recycled water in California? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.